Welcome to my blog talk radio show, Love Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm a creative life balance coach, singer, songwriter, and the author of The Art of Living a Life You Love. I'm happy to have Donna Sager Cowan as my guest today. Donna is the author of the Superhero School series of books for children. Today we'll be talking about the release of her new book, With the Courage of a Mouse, which is book number one in the Superhero School series, and how we can help children to cultivate their self-worth during challenging times in their lives and remind them that they matter. Hello, Donna.
Hello, Margot. How are you today?
I am great, and I'm so happy to have you on the show. I have to say, first off, I love your book. I got it, and I couldn't believe it. I just could not put the book down. You had me so curious right from the start and really enjoying the characters. And I just knew I had to have you on the show and talk to you about it. So thank you for being on the show today and sharing with our listeners about your story, your book. And I think let's start out with could you share with our listeners about your journey of self-worth and believing in yourself? Because the book is a lot about that, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, thank you. I am so thrilled that you liked the book. And yes, the book itself, it is rated for children from 7 to 12 years old, but I'm coming to find out that actually the book is a little bit for everyone. And, you know, it's kind of a reflection of my journey growing up and also, you know, my daughters growing up and now my grandchildren growing up. And it seems to me that we all kind of have the same issues with, you know, self-worth and feeling valuable. And, you know, for me, you know, I was the youngest child in a large family and I kind of felt overlooked. I felt like no one had time for me. And that I was constantly on this road of trying to play catch up to, you know, to know things, to be able to do things like they were able to, that I was never going to be able to win. And it did affect my self-worth. It made me more drawn into myself and a little more hesitant to ask questions or to try new things because I didn't feel I was good enough. And, you know, and this has kind of stayed with me all up to the point of writing this book. I've been writing for over 45 years. I've written multiple books. I never tried to publish them because I just didn't think they were good enough. I didn't think anybody would want to read my stories. But you know what?
Well, you know
I just
what?
Decided I am good enough.
Yes, you definitely are. And the other thing is that I think that it's just such a universal thing. I think that Louise Hay always said it, and it's so true. I think that everybody feels they're not good enough, at least in some ways, not maybe in all ways, hopefully not in all ways. But I think that we all have that happen to us where we feel like we're maybe not enough, we're not good enough, or why would people like what I create, that sort of thing. But how did you get past that? That's, I guess, the key. How did you get past that and get the book out there then?
Well, you know, it was a very strange thing. It was, you know, it was kind of several different things. Number one, the story itself was inspired by one of my granddaughters. She asked me a question about one of my actual cats and what she did at night when she was gone all night and she would come back so exhausted. So we made up this story about her being a superhero and she's out saving her friends. And of course, you know, the story developed as we told it as a bedtime story. And when they asked me to write it, we decided that maybe we should go back to the beginning and tell the story of how she became a superhero. So therefore the superhero school was born. You know, there was that. And then there was also the point where I decided, you know, I'm 56 years old. I need to give myself permission to do the things that I want to do. I need to stop holding myself back and worrying about what other people think. And then the third thing is I found Carrie Oberbrunner. This man has the belief of mountains. It's like if it had not been for his steadfast belief that I could do it and that there were people that wanted to read and hear this story, I don't think I would have persevered. I think all three of those things had to happen, and I'm glad that they did. And I'm kind of glad that they happened now instead of earlier, because I don't think I could have written as good of a story, you know, 5 years ago or even 2 years ago.
Well, I'm a firm believer in divine timing. And it, yeah, the older I get, I'm in my mid-60s myself, 65 this year. And you're right. I mean, it's like a lot of times I look back and I think, boy, I'm really glad that didn't happen sooner than it did. And also, there's so many things that have to go into things happening and working and being at the right time. It's not just that we decide it's the right time. It's the whole universe working with us to have it be the right time. And I feel like this is the right time for this book to come out. I think it's needed, and
right.
I think it's going to be enjoyed by a lot of people.
Well, right, and it, you know, it was delayed for almost a year. I, you know, kept running into, for lack of a better term, just basically challenges for me as writing the book. It's like, you know, my mother has always been my greatest champion when it came to writing. She always encouraged me to do it, to pursue it, and that it was something that was innate in me that I was good at and that I should continue to try. I lost her in 2018, in early 2018, and that was very heartbreaking to me that she didn't actually get to see me publish my first book. And then a month later, while I was recovering from that, my illustrator had a stroke and was in a coma for 77 days. And when she woke up, she couldn't – 77 days.
77 days?
Yes.
That's a long time.
And yes, it was. And it was very scary for me. I didn't know what was going to happen. And then when she woke up, she couldn't talk. She couldn't walk. She couldn't draw. She couldn't do anything. And she actually encouraged me to try and go and find somebody else. And I just really didn't want to, you know, and I mean, it's as simple as that. I was being a little bit stubborn and I was like, no, you know, she and I had such a good connection over the story. I really didn't want to try and spend the time to go and find somebody else that could interpret my words into pictures. And so I just told her, I'm like, well, I don't need them right this minute, so let's wait and see what happens. And it gave her the courage and the, you know, the want to and the need to work just that little bit harder, just that little bit longer each time she went through physical therapy. And, you know, 4 months later, she had all of these illustrations done for me. She did not believe herself that she could do it. But just the fact that I was willing to believe gave her everything that she needed to do it. And it's like that right there is a divine moment in this book. And it made this book so much more meaningful and have, I think, such a bigger impact on not just me, but the people around me.
Well, the illustrations are wonderful. I think that she did an amazing job on the illustrations, and the combination of your writing and her illustrations really does pull you through the book and then gets you so involved in the characters. I'd like to talk a little bit about the characters, though, because the time ends up going by really fast on this show, and I want to make sure we talk about the characters in the book. Okay, so one of the two main characters of your book, Cat the Cat, experiences her own challenges growing up and along the path to meeting Simon Cheddar, the book's other main character, and they're going to superhero school. So tell us a little bit about Simon Cheddar and Cat the Cat and the superhero school, the whole idea of them going to a superhero school.
Well, you know, the two main characters are kind of at a crossroads, both of them, and they each have their own problems, but they don't really recognize them. You know, Kat comes from the actual real world, and she is a cat that has been abandoned by her her owners and, you know, left to kind of fend for herself. So she has some trust issues. She has some value issues and self-worth issues. And she, you know, she really doesn't feel comfortable. You know, she always is looking for the next problem. And she also believes that she is responsible for every bad thing that's happened to her in her life. Now, on the other side, we have Simon. Simon has kind of led a very protected, sheltered life in Mouseville with all of his mouse friends, and, you know, and he collects things, and he, you know, he's a big planner, you know, except for the problem is that Simon has had such a small life that he doesn't see very far beside himself or beyond himself. And so when he makes these plans, he doesn't really think them through too much, other than how he's going to be affected. And so this is where the two of them meet, is they're, you know, Simon is trying to go to superhero school and he runs into a few problems, and Kat just is trying to go about her business and some dogs are chasing her, and she ends up going to the secret portal and ends up in the world of Sweet Meadows and finds Simon. And you know, there's several things that happen. She learns that she can talk and she can walk. And so when they meet, it's like they're supposed to be enemies, but they're not quite sure how to take each other. And Kat actually ends up saving Simon. And so he's trying to help her because he feels like he's slightly indebted, but at the same time, he doesn't really trust Kat. And so they end up deciding to sort of try to befriend and go to superhero school and see how that takes them on their journey. And it's a wonderful journey for both the characters because they do learn a lot from each other and the problems that develop mostly because of their own insecurities and their own self-esteem issues that they have to learn to deal with.
Yeah. Well, I love it, and I love the characters, and I think that the fact that they're so different, and like you're saying, cats and mice aren't supposed to get along, and the mouse isn't supposed to trust the cat, and the cat isn't supposed to care about the mouse, and I mean, it really, you know, to me, then the other characters in the superhero school or other animals, I won't go into that, I want people to be surprised by that, but the characters that you come up with in the superhero school, and they're wonderful, and then the illustrations, of course, helps you picture them. And but what I'm thinking is that it's kind of definitely like real life. I mean, you know, you go to school and you don't know, or out into the job world or wherever, and you don't know who can you trust, and sometimes somebody will seem really confident, and so it makes you feel less confident and that sort of thing. But the fact that they're so different and they can help each other is a reminder to us all that we can help each other and benefit from each other's strengths as well. I think that that's a really important aspect of it.
Right, and that's, you know, that's something that I do try to make sure that I mention when I go into some of these school visits and talks and stuff that I do, is that, you know, even though you don't have maybe the talent of someone else, doesn't mean that your talent or the things that you provide to the world are of any less value. I had someone tell me this statement once before. They said, what you find ordinary, other people find extraordinary.
I love that. I've heard that before, and I love that. Say that again, because I think that's really important.
What you find ordinary, other people find extraordinary.
That is really powerful. I really like that a lot. And the thing is, we're all different, and so everybody's going to find things being extraordinary and ordinary differently. And so to judge ourselves by how other people feel and what they think is important is, that's, I think, where a lot of us go wrong. And so how does self-esteem develop for children? That's a question that I was wondering about as we're talking about this.
Well, you know, self-esteem develops for most children the way it does for anyone. It's a matter of, you know, what is noticed and what is not noticed. And it also has to do with how it's noticed. If somebody continues to scold or belittle or discount something you're doing, then most people will stop doing it or will only do it in secret. Therefore, also, if something is praised or gets a good reaction, then they tend to do it more. Almost, you know, and especially in children, they almost kind of take these two things to the extreme where they're struggling with math. And then somebody says something to them about not being good at math or you just aren't getting this. And it's like, so to them, it almost becomes this block where they fear math. They're afraid to try. It's this insurmountable mountain to them. Whereas if somebody says, "Oh, you're really good at, you know, playing basketball," then they focus all of their attention, all their time, on, you know, basketball or whatever it is that they're receiving the praise for. So, you know, I have some, you know, some tips for parents about, you know, how to help their kids with this. And it's like, you know, praise and acknowledgement is a huge thing for these kids. It's like we need to acknowledge the things that they are doing well, and we need to acknowledge the things they are not doing well, but we also need to praise that they are trying. It's like, I think this is where we forget, is we only praise or, you know, dismiss, you know, the good or the bad. It's like the fact that they're trying should be the big thing that we praise, because let's face it, if you're doing something, like when I was writing the book, greatest praise for me was somebody was like, "I'm so proud that you keep doing this." You know, even though they hadn't read a word of anything that I wrote, just the fact that they were thankful and proud of me to keep trying, because writing a book takes a while. You know, also, you know, allow them to have open discussions with you. It's like sometimes we forget, you know, we are the taskmasters, we are the rulers, we are the boundary setters in our lives. And in the lives of our children, but sometimes we need to actually step back from that a little bit and have some open discussions with them about the things that they feel unequipped to deal with, or that they feel uncomfortable with, or that they struggle with, to try and come up with some kind of strategy or some kind of a plan to help them get past that. It's kind of like, you know, when your children are young, it's like most children are afraid of the dark. Now, not all, but very few of them are not afraid of the dark. And so most parents have some mythology that they use to overcome that fear of the dark with their children. This is kind of the same thing. You know, overcome, help them overcome whatever it is that that block that they can't seem to get around or past. And then the third thing is, you know, show confidence and self-worth for yourself. The hardest thing for a child is to feel self-confident and have any kind of self-worth if their parent is constantly berating themselves. "Oh, I'm not very good at this stuff. I just, you know, I'm not a very good cook. I can't budget very well. It's like, I try to sew, but it never turns." I understand that these are things that are personal to you, but if you have a child in the room and you're constantly saying this, this is a behavior pattern to them that they're going to want to emulate, because you are their primary teacher on how to behave.
Yeah, their teacher, their role model. Yeah. You know, what you're saying is so true, because I remember when our son's 29 now, but when he was really little, I remember Wayne Dyer had talked about in his tapes that I love, What Do You Really Want for Your Children, about building self-esteem and about how they model what they see us do, what they hear us say, how we live our lives, you know, and it's so true that they do. They model what they hear you say. And I remember when Xander was only about two or whatever, one of his first sentences was, Mommy, where are you? And I'm thinking, where did that come from? And then I'm listening to myself going, Xander, where are you? You know, because he's little and around the house, you're going, Xander, where are you? And then I started realizing, wow, I need to be the best mom role model and friend I can be for him. And I need to really start doing things that help me feel good about myself. You're right. So that I could model that for him at least as much as I could. I mean, we all have our issues that we need to work on, I think, for self-esteem. But I think it's really important for parents to, like you said, to take care of their own self-esteem so that they can be a model of it for their children.
Right.
And I think it makes them more likely to want to help them try by feeling good about themselves, don't you think?
Right, exactly. And it's one of the other things, I want to go back to the first one about acknowledgement. It's like no one is a perfect person. You know, you can't be perfect and have lived a life. It just is not possible. So, you know, again, acknowledgement. If you mess up as an adult, you know, be like that child. Acknowledge when you're wrong. And, you know, talk to your children. It's like, yeah, you know what, I did this. It's probably not the best way to have handled it. It's like, I probably should have done this. It's like, you know, you have to temper that with their age. But, just acknowledging that you did something wrong a lot of times gives them that sense of self-worth. It's like, it's okay to mess up. Because also is a disconnect for children. It's like, well, wait, I wasn't perfect. Now what do I do?
Right. Yeah, that's such an important point, because I remember that when I was younger, mistakes used to just, I would feel so badly about them, I'd end up making them again and again and again, because that was what I was thinking about. But the more you can look at them as just learning experiences and then think about, okay, what do I want to do differently next time? Luckily, I had figured that out when Xander was little, and so we would talk about making mistakes being stepping stones to success, and that, you know, when you try new things that you're going to make mistakes, but you can learn from them. So I think that what you're saying is really, really true. And wow, we've only got 7 minutes left now, and I'm thinking, what are the most important things that I want to talk to you about?
Well, I would like to go ahead and go, you know, with these strategies that I have for, you know, families that, you know, are dealing with either kind of a crisis or challenges in their home, because this is such an important message for me, because I think no matter what we normally do, when a crisis happens or when challenges happen, it's like all the things that we want to do and all the things we plan kind of just go flying out the window.
Right. So true.
And so, I think, you know, first and foremost is you have to be honest and open with your kids about what's really happening. Because I can guarantee you, if you aren't telling them, they are imagining the worst. And, you know, they have very good imagination, and they also think it's their fault. So, you know, you need to open that dialogue with your kids, let them know what's really going on and, you know, how you're trying to deal with it. I don't know that you have to go into full detail, but just acknowledging that there is a problem. Also, you know, bring them into the discussion. Ask them, you know, what their opinion is or what their ideas are about the problem or possible solutions. You know, just including them in that also tends to calm their fears. And because, again, they do feel responsible. And then, you know, always consider their fears and their opinions. You know, acknowledging that there is a problem, acknowledging that they are afraid, acknowledging mm-hmm. that they are probably imagining the worst and blaming themselves are very key, and to listen to what they have to say, because, you know, I never know where my answers to problems are going to come from. And believe it or not, I've had my grandkids tell me things that just astound me, and I'm just like, wow, okay, that was my great one thing to learn today. So you can't discount where you're going to find the answers from. And sometimes, just from their perspective, they might have maybe not the whole answer, but maybe the spark of an answer.
Mhm. Yeah, that's really true. And that is portrayed really well, I think, through the characters in your book. And now the With the Courage of a Mouse is the book one, and then With the Courage of a Cat is book two. So the cat's going to be the main character in the second book, I imagine, and Simon
will
still
be
in there.
It's the curiosity of a cat. It is a continuation of the superhero school series. We will have all of the characters from book one, or the majority of the characters. We're going to be adding some new ones. I have a little clip, if we got time for me to read it, from book two.
Well, we've got only about 3 minutes, so we can have time for a really quick clip.
Okay, so let's see. Cat pushed herself to stand on shaky legs. The plane dipped and rolled below her feet. She braced herself against the wall, keeping her body braced as far away from the sliding door as possible. Cat wanted out of the airplane, out of the straps, back in helmet. They felt too tight, sucking up all the air around her, but Simon was here, so she was safe. But he was right. She needed to try new things and stop being so afraid. She could be courageous. She could do scary things. She promised herself she would be able, just as her stomach rolled. A greasy stew of fear and street tacos Freddie convinced her to buy churned with every bump and dip of the plane. The door rattled as the instructor tugged it open. Her stomach dropped to her toes, bouncing up again. Some of it escaped on the way back to the top. Cat prayed no one noticed the stink bomb wafting from below her tail. A rumble of voices and shoving bodies drew her attention across the plane, and she locked eyes with Bash, the twin cat and part-time bully from her class. Why was he staring at her? Did he know? Man, Buff, his brother shouted, waving a paw under his scrunched-up nose. Did you crack a rat? He elbowed Bash and grinned. Crack it, Bash yelled back, a huge grin stretching his lips over his shiny teeth. I killed it, can't you smell right? Dash pushed his brother back a step as they both howled and laughed. Some of the other students edged away from the plane, chuckling and holding their nose. Cat felt the heat flood her face when Dash lifted his eyes to stare directly at her and winked. Did he know? Had he just covered for her? Cat was so confused. He was supposed to be mean. Both of them were bullies. Was this a trick?
Well, I have to say I'm really, really curious to read With the Curiosity of a Cat. When will that be coming out?
It is slated to be out in November of 2019. So it will be out, like I said, we're looking at November, probably late October, first part of November for it to be released. I will have an actual release date by the 1st of July.
That sounds great. Well, people can get a hold of you at DonnaSagerCowan.com, and they can also get the book on Amazon, correct, at Amazon?
Yes, the book is available wherever books are sold. There are many links. If you go to my website, you can connect with me through all my social media. You can find all the purchase links to the different retailers, and you can connect with me or get information about signups for school visits. And I have an upcoming event page that I also have on there.
Well, that sounds like a great idea for them to check your website then. Thank you so much for being on my show today, and for writing your book, the first one. And I'm excited about the second one. Everyone, please share this show with your family and friends and let them learn about these wonderful books, wonderful, inspiring books. Thank you for living your music in the ways that you are, Donna. I appreciate that. You're helping make the world a better place.
You. Well, I certainly hope so, at least for one person, that is all I look for in this world.
Yeah. Well, everyone out there, please live your music. Bye for now, everyone. Thank you again, Donna, for being on the show and for writing the book.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's been a wonderful time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.